Lesson 1 said efficiency is the through line of this track. This is the lesson that makes that concrete. Before you write a single training loop, you can work out on paper how much compute a model will need, how much memory it will take, and whether the hardware will actually be busy doing the work. That accounting is not a side skill. It is the thing every later design decision, how big a model, how long to train, which kernel, how to parallelize, is ultimately argued in terms of. Learn to count, and the rest of the course has a common currency. This lesson assumes the PyTorch comfort the track expects. The payoff is that, is this feasible? Becomes a calculation instead of a guess. Flops, the unit of compute. Compute is measured in flops, floating point operations. Almost all of a transformer's compute is matrix multiplication, so if you can count the flops in a matmul, you can count the model. Multiplying A, shape M by K, by B, shape K by N, to get C, shape M by N, computes each of the M times N outputs as a dot product of length candle. A dot product of length K is K multiplications and about K additions, so roughly 2K operations. Total, the factor of 2 is the multiply and add. Hold that formula. It is most of what you need, because the model is a stack of matmuls. The 6-in rule, a training run on the back of an envelope. You rarely count every matmul. There is a famous approximation that gets you within a small factor, expressed in two numbers. N, the number of model parameters, and D, the number of tokens you train on. A forward pass costs about 2N flops per token. Each parameter participates in roughly 1 multiply add. The backward pass costs about twice the forward pass. So training costs about 2 for the forward pass, 4 for the backward, 6 total, times parameters, times tokens. That single rule lets you size a training run before you start it. Worked example, a 1 billion parameter model trained on 100 billion tokens needs about 6 times 10 to the 20th flops. 6 times a billion parameters times 100 billion tokens. If a GPU delivers, say, on the order of 10 to the 15th useful flops per second, that is about 600,000 seconds of compute, the 6 times 10 to the 20th divided by 10 to the 15th. Roughly a week on one device, which immediately tells you that you will want more than one, the subject of the parallelism lesson. You just scoped a training run with arithmetic. Memory. What has to fit on the device? Compute tells you how long. Memory tells you whether it fits at all, and memory is often the binding constraint. During training, the device holds several things, and it helps to count them per parameter. Using standard 4-byte, FP32 numbers, parameters, n values, 4n bytes, gradients, one per parameter, another 4n bytes, optimizer states, the atom optimizer and its common variant atom W keeps two running statistics per parameter, a momentum and a variance. So 2 times n values, 8n bytes. That is 4n plus 4n plus 8n. Which is 16N bytes before you have stored a single activation. A 1 billion parameter model therefore needs about 16G byte just for parameters, gradients, and optimizer state. On top of that sit the activations, the intermediate values saved during the forward pass so the backward pass can use them, and these scale with batch size and sequence length, not with parameter count. The practical consequences are immediate. Optimizer state often dwarfs the model itself, and activation memory is why you cannot simply use an enormous batch. Memory accounting, not just flop accounting, decides what you can train on the hardware you have. Arithmetic intensity. Is the hardware actually busy? Here is the subtlety that separates people who can estimate cost from people who can make code fast. A GPU has two distinct limits. How many flops per second it can compute, and how many bytes per second it can move from its memory. An operation is bottlenecked by whichever it exhausts first. Arithmetic intensity is the ratio that decides which. High intensity, many flops per byte. The operation is compute bound, the GPU's arithmetic units stay busy, and you are using the hardware well. Large matrix multiplies are like this. Low intensity, few flops per byte. The operation is memory bound, the arithmetic units sit idle, waiting for data to arrive, and the expensive GPU is mostly stalled. Element-wise operations, adds, activations, normalizations, are like this. This is the single idea behind a huge amount of the system's work later in the track. It is why fusing many small memory-bound operations into one, the flash attention idea, in lesson 6, is such a large win, and why bigger batches and bigger matmuls help. They raise arithmetic intensity, keeping the arithmetic units fed. A model can be using a tiny fraction of a GPU's theoretical flops, not because the math is slow, but because the data cannot arrive fast enough, and arithmetic intensity is how you see that coming. INOPS, reading the shapes. A surprising amount of model code is not math, but reshaping tensors, and written with raw view, permute, and transpose, calls it becomes an unreadable, bug-prone puzzle of bare numbers. INOPS fixes this by letting you name the dimensions. Compare splitting a packed attention tensor into heads. The INOPS version states exactly what happens. A batch by sequence by heads times dim tensor becomes batch by heads by sequence by dim. The named dimensions make the shape transformation legible, catch mistakes at the point you write them, and double as documentation. Since shape bugs are among the most common and most maddening in model code, this readability is not cosmetic. It is how you keep a from-scratch implementation correct. Why this matters when you build AI. Resource accounting is the literacy that turns model building from hope into engineering. With the 6nd rule and the 16N memory estimate, you can answer, before spending a dollar of compute, the questions that actually decide a project. How long will this train? How many devices do I need? Will it even fit in memory? The arithmetic intensity lens then explains the gap between a GPU's advertised speed and what you actually get, and it motivates nearly every optimization in the system's half of this track. And INOPS keeps the implementation you are accounting for legible enough to trust. Together, these are the difference between let us train it and see, and a plan you can defend. Every later lesson, kernels, parallelism, scaling laws, leans on this accounting, which is why it comes second, right after the tokenizer and before the architecture itself. What you should remember, compute is flops, and a matrix multiply, m by k times k by n, costs about 2 times mem times n times k. The model is mostly matmuls, so this is most of the counting. The 6nd rule, training costs about 6nd flops, n parameters, d tokens, 2 for the forward pass and 4 for the backward. It scopes a training run from 2 numbers. Training memory is roughly 16n bytes in FP32, parameters, 4n, plus gradients, 4n, plus atom optimizer states, 8n, before activations, which scale with batch and sequence length. Memory is often the binding constraint. Arithmetic intensity equals flops per byte moved. High intensity is compute bound, hardware busy good. Low intensity is memory bound, hardware stalled, waiting on memory. Large matmuls are compute bound. Element-wise, OPIs are memory bound. Arithmetic intensity is why fusion and big batches help, and why a GPU often runs far below its peak flops. It motivates most of the system's work later in the track. INOPS names tensor dimensions. You write the rearrange with named axes instead of bare numbers, as in the example above, making shape transformations readable and far less bug-prone than raw view and permute calls. Before you train anything, you can count what it will cost. 6nd for compute, 16n for memory, and arithmetic intensity for whether the hardware will be busy. That accounting is the common currency of every decision in the rest of this track.